Science fiction and Christian theology? Dr. Michael Gleghorn examines the biblical truth found in the second book of C.S. Lewis's cosmic trilogy, On Probe.
In C.S. Lewis's novel Perelandra, the second book in what some have called the cosmic trilogy, Dr. Elwin Ransom is sent by God to the planet Venus on a mission of great importance. Although Ransom has learned that dark spiritual powers on Earth are plotting some sort of attack on Perelandra, or Venus, he doesn't know precisely what he's to do about it once he arrives, nor why he's been chosen for such a venture. But God knows, and he specially prepared Ransom for this mission, though this doesn't mean it will be easy. In a prior program, I observed how God had providentially orchestrated Ransom's earlier adventures on the planet Mars in order to help him develop some of the martial virtues, traits like grit, courage, and perseverance. As this second story on the planet Venus, or Perelandra, unfolds, the reader gradually comes to see how important this preparation was. Indeed, before his mission can be completed, Ransom will need all these virtues, along with the grace and help of God, if he's to successfully realize the purpose for which he's been sent. In the first two chapters of the novel, Lewis foreshadows key themes that will surface later in the story. These include demonic opposition to the plans and purposes of God, the importance of dying to one's self-will and yielding that will to God, and the possibility of Ransom's physical combat in injury. The most important of these is probably that of dying to one's self-will by continually surrendering that will to God. As Lewis makes clear elsewhere, such surrender might be harder or easier depending on the spiritual condition of the one who needs to do the surrendering. For an unfallen creature, such surrender could be experienced as a kind of pleasure. For a fallen and sinful creature, however, it involves a kind of death. This is foreshadowed in the novel by the fact that Ransom is transported to Perelandra in a large, coffin-shaped casket. The very means by which he's taken to Perelandra symbolizes the fact that God is taking Ransom on a journey that will require him to die to his own will by surrendering to the divine will. In the remainder of the week, we'll consider some of the key issues that Lewis explores in this novel, particularly as these concern the martial spirit in Ransom, who functions as God's representative in Perelandra.
You've been listening to Probe with your host, Dr. Michael Gleghorn. Want to read more into a science fiction book that is filled with biblical principles and inspiring imagination? Then get your free copy of Michael's transcript, Perelandra, at probe.org. That's probe.org. And join us next time here on Probe.
In C.S. Lewis's cosmic trilogy, each planet in our solar system is governed by a powerful spiritual intelligence that combines aspects of a Christian archangel with the characteristics of a Roman god or goddess. Hence, in Lewis's first novel of the trilogy, Out of the Silent Planet, we learn that the planet Mars is governed by a powerful angelic ruler with qualities like the Roman god Mars, though void of all the negative characteristics attributed to Mars in Greco-Roman mythology. In a similar way, in Lewis's second novel, Perelandra, we learn that Perelandra, or Venus, is governed by an angelic ruler with characteristics like those of the Roman goddess Venus, the goddess of love and beauty. After initially being deposited in the ocean of Perelandra, and then making his way to one of the many floating islands of that world, Ransom soon discovers that the planet is replete with beauty and pleasure. The colors, the fragrances, the taste of the fruits, everything about the planet exudes beauty, wonder, joy, and pleasure. Eventually, Ransom meets Tenedril, the unfallen first mother of Perelandra, also known as the Green Lady due to the color of her skin. She has been separated from Tor, the first father and king of Perelandra, in part because of the floating islands. At this stage in the history of Perelandra, Tor and Tenedril occupy a position much like that of Adam and Eve before the fall. One day, while Ransom is conversing with the Green Lady, they see something like a shooting star race across the sky and fall into the ocean. They later discover that Weston, the physicist who originally kidnapped Ransom and took him to Mars, has come to Perelandra on a spaceship. Given his history with Weston, Ransom is naturally worried about why he should have come to Perelandra. Talking with Weston only increases his concerns, for Weston's previously naturalistic philosophy now has a decidedly religious bent. He claims to have been guided to Paralandra by a spiritual force. And the more Ransom hears, the more he thinks this force may well be diabolical. When Weston arrogantly calls that force into himself, he is suddenly possessed by a demonic spirit. He is the bridge by which this evil spirit has entered Paralandra. Ransom now understands that he has been sent to Paralandra to protect the Green Lady from Weston. This week we're considering C.S. Lewis's novel Paralandra, which largely takes place on the planet Venus. Paralandra, or Venus, exists in a state much like that of Earth prior to the fall of Adam and Eve. It is an unfallen paradise. But there's a problem. Weston, a proud and arrogant scientist, has come to Paralandra at the behest of an evil spirit. Shortly after landing on the planet, he is completely possessed by this spirit. Ransom, the hero of the story, now realizes that God has sent him to Paralandra in order to prevent the planet's first couple from falling into the same disobedience as our first parents. Weston, now referred to as the Unman, soon begins tempting Tenedril, the Paralandrian Eve, to disobey God, trying to get her to sleep on the fixed land. You see, Paralandra consists of both floating islands and fixed land, and God has forbidden the first couple to sleep on the fixed land, just as Adam and Eve were forbidden to eat fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Initially, Ransom tries to counter the Unman's arguments to disobey God with arguments of his own. After many days, however, he realizes that he cannot allow this to continue. Tenedril has been faithfully resisting the Unman's temptations, but she seems to be growing weaker, and Ransom sees that something more definitive must be done. While thinking about this issue, Ransom realizes that God is calling him to confront and physically fight the Unman. This is where Ransom's prior experience on Mars and his development of the martial spirit become particularly important. God has prepared Ransom for this, and now calls upon him to destroy the corrupt demonic evil that has invaded his good world. Ransom initially resists this idea, fearing that he may well be killed in such a violent encounter. But God impresses upon Ransom that he's his representative in Paralandra, and if he fails, there will be very real consequences. Paralandra really can fall into the hands of the enemy, just as Earth did. Ransom is forced to confront the agonizing reality that his choices are significant and make a real difference. If he chooses to do nothing, then evil will win, and Paralandra will be ruined. He thus decides that he must yield his will to God's will, fight the Unman, and attempt to rid this beautiful world of its evil invader. This week we're discussing C.S. Lewis's novel Paralandra. Yesterday we saw how Dr. Ransom, the hero of the story, comes to realize that God is calling him to fight and destroy the Unman. The Unman is a demon-possessed physicist whose humanity has been obliterated by the demonic spirit inhabiting his body. He wants to persuade Tenedril, the Paralandrian Eve, to disobey God, thus introducing sin and evil into this unfallen paradise. Although some might find it startling that God would call Ransom to fight and destroy the Unman, we must not forget that at this point, the Unman is mostly just a demon-possessed corpse, an enemy of both God and the innocent persons on Paralandra. Moreover, Lewis carefully contextualizes this battle within the larger mythological world of his story. As Ransom realizes while contemplating this issue, whatever happened here would be of such a nature that Earthmen would call it mythological. The bottom line is that evil has invaded and is attempting to destroy God's good world of Paralandra, and God is utterly serious about eliminating it. As a just and holy being, God cannot allow evil to go unjudged and unpunished, for evil, by its very nature, deserves punishment. Moreover, since evil will always seek to corrupt and destroy all that is good, it must either be set right through repentance and submission to God's will, or else be completely eliminated from God's good creation. There is no other alternative if God wants to restore his world to perfect goodness, peace, and rest. The battle begins the next morning, and Ransom gets an initial victory. The Unman flees, Ransom pursues, and they eventually end up in a large, dark underground cavern. Although it's too dark to see, Ransom finally believes that he has killed the Unman, and he sets off to find his way out of the darkness. Unfortunately, however, the demonic spirit reanimates Weston's corpse and pursues him. As the Unman comes up out of a tunnel, Ransom confronts him, crushes his head with a large stone, and pushes the corpse over a ledge into a sea of fire below. Here, Lewis probably intends an allusion to the biblical lake of fire, into which the devil and his offspring are ultimately cast. Ransom, imbued with the martial spirit, has been victorious, and the evil which had invaded Paralandra has been defeated. We've been discussing the martial spirit in C.S. Lewis's novel Paralandra. Yesterday we learned how Dr. Ransom, the hero of the novel, killed the demonically possessed Unman by crushing his head with a large stone. After the battle, Ransom, completely exhausted, falls into a deep sleep, possibly symbolic of death. After waking, he eventually emerges, with the aid of divine providence, from the deep, dark, tomb-like cavern in which the final battle had taken place, into the light and air of Paralandra, which is possibly symbolic of resurrection. Given the extent of Ransom's injuries, it takes some time for him to recover. During this long Sabbath, Ransom lay by a stream, eating, drinking, and sleeping. Only when he is nearly well does he discover his most serious injury. It was a wound in his heel, inflicted by the Unman in one of their many violent encounters. The wound is still bleeding when Ransom first notices it, and nothing he could do would stop it. Here we see Ransom emerge from his martial victory over the Unman as a type of Christ. Those familiar with the Bible will recall Genesis 3:15, in which the Lord tells the serpent, who led Adam and Eve into disobedience, that he will put enmity between the serpent and his offspring, and the woman and her offspring. "He shall bruise your head," God tells the serpent, "and you shall bruise his heel." Lewis is clearly portraying Ransom as a Christ figure, who has acted as God's representative in Paralandra. In a small and limited way, Ransom did something similar to what Jesus had already perfectly accomplished on earth. In the mythological world of the story, he crushed the head of the serpent's offspring, and in turn received a wound in his heel. This might remind us of the Apostle Paul's concluding words to the church in Rome: "The God of peace will soon crush Satan under your feet." Insofar as we belong to Christ, we act as his representatives in the world. What is true of Christ is also, in some sense, true of his people. Having thus secured martial victory in Paralandra, Ransom returns to earth with the wound in his heel as a continual reminder of his battle against the forces of evil. And it is in this condition that we will meet him for the last time in the concluding novel of this series, That Hideous Strength.